Shavu Atov to everybody. This is us to talk about issues of giving. And you know, in Halacha there is a distinction between Tzedakah and Gmilut Chesed. And the Talmud says that Gmilut Chesed is something you do with your own body, with your own begufo. Tzedakah is bemamono, with your property. And Gmilut Chesed is all those aspects in which giving is not giving of wealth or property, but it's giving of yourself. And the Talmud brings a whole set of examples for that. Something like Bikur Cholim, going to a funeral, Nichum Avelim, comforting the mourners. All this is not exactly tzedakah in the sense that you redistribute wealth in the community. It's giving of yourself. And I wanted to talk about one aspect of giving of yourself, which is forgiveness. Slicha. And what I would like to do, it is something we do in class, but I wanted to bring a new text so my student will not be bored. I am interested in terms of understanding how the Talmud works, to talk as well as the relationship between law and narrative. There is halacha and then there is sipur, there is narrative. How do they work together? What's the function of the narrative in terms of halacha? So I want to achieve two things. First, to understand deeper what forgiveness is. And then second, to talk about the relationship between law and narrative in the Talmud. So I brought a small text, but I think a jewel. A very subtle and deep text that I would like to look into. I want to say a few things about forgiveness in general, in terms of what we understand in the act of forgiveness and its meaning. First of all, in forgiveness, a person who harmed another person gives his fate to the other person. He says, well, I am in your hands now. He reestablishes his sovereignty. Or there is a reversal of roles. You harm someone, you come to him and says, I beg your forgiveness, I'm in your hands. The harmed and the harming party change roles in that act itself. And by the way, when we study law, there is a lot of issue of who's the harm party, who's the sovereign. Part of what the law does in state, within a state, is really to claim that the state is the sovereign. You cannot either forgive nor revenge in criminal cases. The harm party doesn't have any stake so I want to talk about this relationship of sovereignty between the two sides. And what I would like to do is read this small section in Talmud and talk with you about it. And please, if you have any questions, we are this is an open discussion. Don't be shy to raise it, and don't be shy to ask me a question while we're reading, in case there is a difficulty, in case there is an argument in the way that I interpret the text. Okay. Now, I've marked the text. Just in terms of the background, this is in Gemara Yoma, Pezayin Amud Aleph. And the Gemara here comes after the Mishnah says that transgressions between one person and his friend, or another person, Yom Kippur would not atone to that person unless he pleased and he appeased the harm party. And the Mishnah studies that from the verse Mikol Chatotchem Lifnei Hashem Titaru, from all your sins before God you will be purified. And the Mishnah has a very interesting reading. It says, in Yom Kippur, from all your sins that you did before God, you will be purified. But sins that you have done one person to another, en Yom Kippur mechaper ad sheiratzeh et chavero. Yom Kippur would not atone till you will appease your friend. And this piece of Talmud is in relationship to this Mishnah in Yoma. Okay? So I'm starting to read and interpret. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak said, Kol ha-maknit et chavero afilu bedvarim, tzarich lefayso. Whoever insults or harms his friend, even by words, has to appease him. שנאמר, מי אם ערבת לרעך, תקעת לזר כפיך, נוקשת באמרי פיך, עשה זאת איפה בני וינצל, כי באת בכף רעך, לך והתרפס ורעב רעך, אם המון יש בידיך, אתר לו פיסת ידיך, ואם לאו הרבה עליו רעים. Well, this is a long proof text. The end of it is the most important. It says, if you have his property in your hand, give it back. If not, try to appease him through friends. אמר רב חסדא וצריך לפייסו בשלוש שורות של שלושה בני אדם. שנאמר ישור על אנשים ויאמר, חטאתי וישר הבאתי ולא שווה לי. So he has to bring three rows of three people. It has to be a public act of forgiveness. אמר רבי יוסי ברבי חנינה, כל המבקש מתו מחברו, whoever asks his friends forgiveness, אל יבקש ממנו יותר משלוש פעמים. He doesn't have to, or he shouldn't, ask him more than three times. שנאמר, אנא סנה ואתה סנה. אנא סנה, אתה סנה. Three times. Okay? What is this idea? This idea says that though you have to ask forgiveness, you're not obligated to humiliate yourself. And not only that, the other party has the obligation, what? To forgive. To accept it. Okay? That's the principle that the Talmud speaks.
What is the proof of three times?
What? Sorry?
What is the proof of three times?
You say it says Anna. Anna is one. Please. Sana. Forgive us. Ve'ata Sana. Another time. Three Annas. Okay? You're not happy completely with the proof. What? Okay, but that's the meaning of it. That's from the brothers and Yosef. Ve'im met, if he died, mevi'a sara bnei adam u'ma'amid al kivro. If the other person died, you bring 10 people on his grave. ואומר חטאתי להשם אלוהי ישראל ולפלוני שחבלתי בו. I've sinned against God and this person that I've harmed him. Well, there's always a problem what you do when the party that has to grant the forgiveness is no more there. And basically you bring 10 people, you make that forgiveness a sincere act by making it public. The community stands as a representative of the dead. Okay. Basically, what do we have till now? We have a set of rules, right? The Mishnah, this is the classic way that the Talmud is built. The Mishnah has an idea. It says you ask forgiveness, and the Talmud will develop the institution of forgiveness. How many times you have to ask? What do you do when that person doesn't exist? in what issues you have to ask forgiveness, etc. That's a classic way that the Talmud develops an institution of halacha. Now, we come to the main point of this shiur. These rules are followed by two stories I want to read with you and think about. Okay? I think they're very interesting stories. Rabbi Yirmiya hava le milta le Rabbi Abba ba'adei. Rabbi Yirmiya harmed or insulted Rabbi Abba. Okay? These are two Amoraim that had a fight between them, and Rabbi Yirmiya was wronged Rabbi Abba. Azal Aitiv Adasha the Rabbi Abba. He went and sat down at the door of Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Yirmiya went. Why did he go to Rabbi Abba? In the context of the Gemara, we know that he went to ask forgiveness. But he was standing there at the door. He sat at the door. Bahadei de shadia amatei maya, mata zarzife de maya areisha. While the maid was cleaning the house up there, she was throwing the water and the garbage, and it fell on his head. Poor Rabbi Yirmiya, who was standing there waiting to enter. Amar asaunika ashpa. He said, "I've been made into a garbage pail here." Kara anafshe. He called upon himself the verse. He announced upon himself the verse. Me'ashpot yarim evyon. From the sewage, from the garbage, he will raise the poor. God will raise the poor from the garbage. Shama Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Abba heard. Venafik la'pei. Rabbi Abba, who was inside the house, heard him saying that. He went out. Amar le ashta tzrichina le meifaka da'atach. Now I have to ask you forgiveness. Dechtiv lech v'itrapes ur'av re'echa. Okay? Because it says, go and appease your friend. Okay, what is... I want to analyze that story. And I want to raise a serious issue every time you ask forgiveness. Rabbi Yirmiya comes to Rabbi Abba, right? And he stands there. You ask yourself, why is he standing? Why is he standing? He should have what? Walk. Why is he standing? Because he's afraid to face the person he harmed. He doesn't know whether him showing his face will not repeat the insult. He doesn't know whether he has an audience. Right? Many times the real problem with forgiveness is if you harm someone. It's a serious problem. Is that every asking of forgiveness, in order to create the context in which the appeal can be made, forgiveness has to be granted before. Right? Every act of forgiveness is preceded, of asking forgiveness, is preceded by an act of just creating the setup, having the goodwill that the other person even wants to see you. Because usually, very people whom harm don't want to see the harm party altogether. Right? So we know that there is a lot of problems when you want to do a shalom between two people. The main issue really is how can the person who harmed the other one can show up his face. So the story is about, I would call now, my theme today is the availability of the harmed party. Is he available? Okay, that's the issue. Because you say, well, you have to ask forgiveness. That's a nice idea. You might say you have to ask forgiveness 3 times with these people, bring 10. You have all those rules. But there is a problem. Because how you know that the other is available? Right? You might say the whole idea of Yom Kippur is from God to say, I'm available. But that's what God does. So, how did Rabbi Abba's problem was solved? How did Rabbi Ermia's problem solved? He was standing there being afraid to come in. How was it solved? What?
He became the harmed one.
Exactly. He became humiliated himself. Right? He was thrown garbage at his head, this very important person, and he says, Saunika Ashpa, I've been made a... now they are, as they say, now they're even. Right? So, now they're even, so Rabbi Abba comes out and says, now I have to ask you forgiveness, as if, well, that we know the tactics, right? That the only way, yes.
It seems as though he knew he was there.
Well, could be, or that he just heard his voice when, we don't know. Maybe he knew and he said, let him, I don't want to show him, right.
But how did the Shaja, did he expect to become injured by the woman?
He was standing there hesitating.
But how did the Shaja, maybe he was anticipating being...
Maybe, that's... Even more of the reading that we are talking about, right? But what is the issue really? Well, the issue is here is a perverse form of making the other party available. But why? Creating a condition in which you will be harmed by that party that you harmed. So now you are in equal footing, so you can
face each other.
Okay? So we are basically... What is the story tells? The story says, well, let me, through that story, and now we're talking about the function of narrative in law, through that story the Talmud brings the following problem. How we make availability possible? Because this story, the maid acted as the perverse mediator in a strange way between those two. You say, okay, well, there is a way. If you'll be harmed by the other side, you can show up your face to it. Okay. Now let's continue. Rabbi Zera ki ava le milta bead einesh, ava chalif vetani lekamei, Rabbi Zera, when someone harmed him, he would pass by before him a few times, so he will make himself available so the other party can have a chance to ask him forgiveness. Okay? Okay, now, you see, that's a classic way in which the sugya develops, right? You bring a problem, and now there is a rule or some act of piety on the part of Rabbi Zera that says, okay, now we understand that also the harmed party has some obligations. And what is his obligations? To make himself available in an indirect way. So the other will have the opportunity to show up his face. Okay? So you have... For the time being, what do we have? We have a set of abstract rules. Then the Talmud says, I'll bring you a story that this, when you bring it to life, there is a problem. And from that problem, another rule is created, or another custom is created. an example of how Rabbi Zeira solved that problem. Okay. Now comes, to my opinion, one of the deepest, most perplexing stories I know in the Talmud. In terms of, both in terms of forgiveness and both in terms of law and narrative. And I want to study it very carefully. It's really the art of the short story to perfection. Because those stories are really three-line stories. Okay. Rav, hava leimilta be'ade ahut tabcha. Rav, a butcher, herded Rav, harmed Rav. By the way, I want to say Rav. You know, Rav is the most important Babylonian Amora. All the Talmud Bavli depends upon Rav. By the way, butchers are the lowest of the lowest in the Talmud. Chas v'shalom, I'm not... At the time when you say etc. So you're talking about the top and the most low. So Rav, a butcher, harmed Rav. Okay? Lo ata lekamei b'ma'al yom kippura. Rav was waiting in the eve of Yom Kippur for that butcher to come and ask forgiveness for him. Amar Yehu, he said, Rav said, Eizil ana lefiusele, I will go and make myself available to him. So he can what? Ask forgiveness. By the way, presumably Rav follows who? Rabbi Zera. He's going in the footsteps of Rabbi Zera. Paga bei Ravuna. Ravuna met him. Ravuna, by the way, we know, is the most important student of Rav. Right? Ravuna is the most important student of Rav. So the student sees teachers walking in the eve of Yom Kippur, meets him. Amar le, le'echa ka'azilmar, he told him, Master, where are you going? Amar le, le'kliyusei le'plane, I'm going to make myself available before someone. Amar, Ravuna said, Azil Abba Lemiktal Nafsha. Ravuna says, my teacher Abba, that's another name of Rav, is going to kill someone. That's a strange moment, right? So imagine the following. Rav, you know, this is Erev Yom Kippur, the most, you know, before the most important day. Rav is walking, Ravuna meets him, he says, where are you going, teacher? He says, I'm going to make myself available. And Ravuna says to himself, my teacher is going to kill someone. Okay. Let's see how the story unfolds. Azal vekam iluya, Rav comes and stands before the butcher, or stands on top of the butcher. Avayativ, he was sitting there. Vekapali Reisha, he was cleaning the head of an animal. Daleena, he picked up his eyes, the butcher picks up his eyes. Vechazi, and he sees Rav. Amar le Abbaat, you are Abba, that's his name. Zil, go. Lately milta be'adach. I have nothing to do with you. You have no claim on me. Ba'adei kelpalei resha, while he was cleaning the head of the animal, ishtamit garma, part of the bone of the head jumped, umachye bikua vektale, broke his head and killed him. End of the story. Okay? Well, we won't talk about this story. So let's repeat what's going on. Okay, Erev Yom Kippur, Rav a butcher hurt at Rav. Rav is waiting to, for him to come. He says, he's not coming, I'll make myself available. He walks. Ravuna says, my teacher is going to... He says, where are you going? He says, I'm going to make myself available to someone. Ravuna says, well, my teacher is going to kill someone. Then he comes to the butcher, stands there, and the butcher says, you, I have nothing to do with you, go. And while he's cleaning this head of an animal, a bone jumps from the head and kills him. I want to interpret the story. Well, I believe who's the hero, you might say, the silent hero of the story, who understands the dynamics very well. Who's the one who understands what's going to be here?
Ravuna.
He knows what's going on. Now, well, presumably, Rav is acting very piously, right? He's acting like what? Like whom? Like Rav Zeira. He says, you know, though I was harmed by the person, I'm waiting for him to come. I understand that he has difficult to come. I'll come to him. Right. But basically, there is some... What does Ravuna understand? Ravuna understands very well that by going there, the offense will be repeated. Right. Because the butcher will deny Rav's altogether. And since Rav is such a saintly person, the butcher will pay by his life. You know, saints are sometimes environmental hazards. You know, these are dangerous people. He will harm that person, and that person will pay for it in his life. And Ravuna understands it. So, well, I would say, what is the issue here? Basically, the aggression in making yourself available. There's some aggression here. It says, I'm going to show this guy. I'm going to force him what?
To apologize,
right? And, well, Ravuna, I would say Ravuna sees in his teacher the ego working, right? He sees his ego at work and says, my teacher, something about his walk, the determination. He was waiting. You ask yourself, that's what you have to do before Yom Kippur. I'm waiting for that guy to come, right? Where is he? Well, he's not coming. I'm going to go there. Okay. If this is the attitude, right, then you might create another offense, which this guy will pay by his life, right? So, from the point of view of the sugiya, what's going on in the sugiya? And this is, we all know, the real hero of the sugiya is what we call the stam. The stam. The anonymous, the one who edits the sugiya, right? What does he want to achieve, right? The anonymous author. The Talmud has an author that we don't know who is. This is why we call him he's called the Stamain. The anonymous ones. They are, a lot of the Talmudic discussion is not with the name of a certain rabbi. It's Stama de Gemara. Stama de Gemara, what the Rishonim used to say. Well, what is the work of the Stam here? He begins the sugiya with saying there are rules of asking forgiveness. Then he brings the story and says, well, we have rules in abstract, they're fine, but there is an issue of availability of the harm party. Look what happened with Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Abba. And then he says, out of that story, we have a rule that Rabbi Zera exemplifies the rule. That the person who's harmed has to, is obligated to make himself available so the other can show up his face. But then the Talmud says, well, I'll tell you a story where actually making yourself available is what? Is actually an act of what?
Aggression,
right? It's a way to corner the other. And that's what happened with Rav. So what do we learn? We have to learn that it's very, the dance here, it's a dance. It's a very subtle way. There is a subtle way how you make yourself available without cornering the other. Right. Or how you make yourself available in such a way not to cause the other to offend you again. Now, by the way, I was reading the sugiya that you wanted to ask something.
I'm not an expert in Aramaic by any means, but from your translation, you got the sense that Rav Zera was more humble about it. He walked by and sort of dissociated himself, whereas Rav was more on top of the guy.
Right. Kamiluya, he stood above him. As if the intention was physically manifested in the, how we say, Sfat Guf in Hebrew, body language. In the body language.
Yes, part of the question is that how do you reconcile between Midot and what the Halakha should be? What Rabbi Zera did, he worked on himself for a long period of time. To bring himself to such humbleness that to be in front of a simple person is going to to make himself available.
Right.
Rabbi Zera or Rav? What do you mean?
Rabbi Zera.
To reconcile between, there are things that a person should work on without.
Right.
And the halachic issues, so I'm not sure how that.
Okay, let me say, before I come to that, this is a good question. I was thinking while reading it, I asked myself, Rav Huna, what's happening with Rav Huna? He's the clever student, the bright kid in the class. Knows the situation, knows his teacher. If he was following meticulously halacha, what he should have been doing? What should he be done? What should have he done? Stop his teacher, right?
Don't let him come to you. Stay around, let him come to you.
Yeah, let him come to you, maybe take a walk.
Yeah,
I think
see him, okay. Not
or say to him, I think, teacher, that you would, by coming there, you will actually make him
more angry
and you will cause harm to him. But Rav Huna is what? He's passive. He's actually thinking to himself. He says to himself, and he's a sharp guy. We know Rav Huna from the rest of the Talmud. He has a good mind. And he says to himself, my teacher is going, now you ask yourself, what's happening to Rav Huna? Why is he so passive? He's what? I would say he's afraid of his teacher. Like many students. He has a fear of the teacher. And you see the anger of Rav, the fear of Rav Huna caused whose death? The butcher. So now, what is the relationship here between what you asked, halacha and midot? And this is, first of all, I think it deals, this small section deals with a serious problem in all structures of forgiveness. All structures of forgiveness are infected or are overwhelmed by this problem. How do you create the setup in which forgiveness can be And this is, by the way, why all vidui, all of our viduim, right? The vidui of Kohen Gadol starts with what word? Ana, right? Because as if you have to ask, you have to ask forgiveness in order to be able to ask forgiveness. Ana Hashem Chatati Avit. You have to have an audience. Please give me an audience so I can ask forgiveness. But you understand this is a serious issue. How you overcome that initial, how you cross, if I come back to the Rabbi Abba story, how do you cross the threshold to the other? And the Talmud is aware of that problem. Because of that problem, the Talmud says, you should know, there are responsibilities also on the harmed party. And this is exemplified by Rabbi Zera's behavior. You might say, if you follow the Talmud strongly, you have to adopt yourself to the model of Rabbi Zera. Now, is this halakha in the strict sense? We are not sure. I'm not sure. Well, the Rambam doesn't bring it in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Mishneh Torah. But if you study Talmud, and the Talmud is not only law in the strict sense, but it also shows you the way, you might say, above the law, lifni mishurat adin, you have to adopt it. But you have to adopt it in such a way to beware of the other side of the coin, which is the rough story. So how you make yourself available, not in a way that not forcing the other in ways that he will then repeat the offense and be cornered, but he will have a chance then to address you. Now, basically, what does it show? And here I want to come to the issue of what I call law and narrative. It shows and this is typical to the way the Talmud weaves those things in. It shows that with all set of rules, how do rules work in law? Right? How does it work? Usually, you have a case, and you isolate 2-3 features of the case that are relevant from the point of view of the law. Right? In order to make any rule, you have to extrapolate from cases, 2-3 features. So you have a general rule. But every time you extrapolate a feature, you always do wrong a little bit to the case itself. We know that. Everyone who deals with criminal law, or any aspects of the law, knows it fairly well. The law has a general form. It has to have a general form because it applies all across the board. But sometimes when you judge something, you look at the particular features, the background, the anger, the situation, this one, that one, that one. You understand that there is some injustice done by the very fact of generalization. Either way, sometimes le-rachmanut and sometimes le-achmir, sometimes le-akels, sometimes it's too lenient and sometimes it's too strict. When you examine the case, your person, etc. Now, the function of the story, the function of the narrative is to say, you always have to beware of the subtleties of the concreteness of the situation. And nothing can replace what we call good, sensible judgment and common sense. No sort of rules. The rules help you, but they cannot replace them. Right here is great rabbis, right? I would say the function of the narrative in terms of the law is to show you the limitations of law. the power of law and the limitations of law. And here's a very, to my opinion, the Rav story, one of the most powerful stories. Look how short it is, right? It's three line stories that deals very carefully with motivations and aggressions and availability and the student-teacher relationship and the teacher relationship between the Rav and the butcher. We have three characters here in the stories. And it shows you very, very carefully these problematics. Right? So that's a theme because I always recommend you, whenever you see in the Talmud a rule and then set of stories about the rule, there's always, you will always find that feature, that the function of the story has to show you that you have to be self-conscious about the limitation of the rule and the fact that sometimes you need to look at the case, the particular case, the motivations, etc., etc. Right? Because the same rule, you start the following. You have an abstract rule of asking forgiveness. You have a problem of the availability of the harmed person. You have then a second rule to say, well, make yourself available. And that making yourself, the same rule, it's a double-edged sword. It can work against your intentions. I would say the following. You ask yourself, again, there's a problem of the subtlety of the situation. How quickly there is a reversal between the harmed and the harming parties. You see it many times. Right? Between Rav and the butcher, there was an immediate reversal. In a second. Right, where the harmed party becomes what?
The harming
party. Right, that's also part of the dynamics that happened many times. Right, and all this is done how? Because there is, as if, also the complicated relationship between piety and aggression. Because, by the way, Rav can deceive himself to some degree that he's not doing what to go and create the butcher a problem. Why? Because presumably, in his own mind, he's doing what? Something very righteous and pious. And not only that, he's the great man who's harmed, going to this person to... So, I would say the following. The other moral that we can learn is that under the guise of... under the cover of the rule, right, there can be a lot of... it can be twisted. The rule could provide a canopy for self-deception in which aggression can hide behind this rule. I think part of the power of the Talmud is to investigate into those structures in such a deep way and being self-aware of them. Yes.
So one has said that the three stories are a progression, and that the final story, therefore, not only that you should make yourself, you know, about the idea of availability,
right?
You know, zero, but that the real burden of forgiveness is on the victim himself. That Rav should have already forgiven him before he had even asked. Is it even necessary for the butcher to ask?
Well, that's interesting. You know, there are some ideas. There are some ideas there are some ideas that say that the person who's being that forgiveness, it's like what we call amnesty. The Talmud says there is opinion of Rabbi Itzumo Shel Yom Mechaper. Yom Kippur himself, without doing any tshuva, does the atonement. Why? Because sometimes people, in order, people have to change, they have to be forgiven before. That's not the usual halacha, the path of halacha. But I think you're right in capturing something very deep about Rav. Because I think the way the story is made is that Rav is too much preoccupied with this harm. That doesn't relieve the butcher of asking forgiveness if he wants to be atoned. But Rav is boiling, you know. There is something, the fact that it's Erev Yom Kippur, you know, Rav has a lot of business to attend to. And he's kind of waiting for the guy. It means that he hasn't gone through the... He's defined by the harm. He's defined by his wound. Right? So I would not go as far as say that the whole issue can be resolved by Rav saying to himself, I forgave him and this is fine. But the part of the resolution should have been, right, that Rav would have made peace with it would not be defined by that. You know, there is something, I would say, there is something vengeful in the demand that is boiling there. Right, this is where vengeance take over. But here, Rav is not. You know, Rav is a great man. He's not going to, you know, beat the guy or harm him back, right? But so I think you're right in the degree that the work should have been done by this, but I don't think you have to give up the fact that the butcher had to appease him. Yes.
It sounds like he used to make himself available, but for what reason? It sounds like he wanted to hear the apology,
right,
for himself. To feel, because now you apologize to me.
Right.
Instead of saying, I want you to feel good that you apologize.
Right, right.
I think that was the difference.
Right, right. Yes. He wanted the reversal of the power role entailed in that moment. And by that he became very quickly from the harm party to the harming party. Yes.
A little off topic, but in the story, I was wondering if you comment.
Right.
The power of the Hakamim.
Right.
A lot of people today, and we call it superstition, right, they think that the rabbis today,
right,
can curse them.
Right.
Put curses on them. And I always relate that to the Talmudic precedent that we read,
right,
over and over again in these,
right,
stories.
So, right,
can you tell us a little something about that?
Yeah, you know, Keshgaga sheyotzet mipi ha-shalit, the Talmud uses this term. Look, there are different depends which way you take.
Can I be more specific?
Go ahead, please.
So, some people want to take this literally.
Right.
So that's my question. Do we need to take it literally, or should we only see it from the point of view of this up here, giving us background to the...
Look, you can see, let me say, you can see, you can read this text and say, well, what is the text about? You see the power of the Chacham. Someone harmed the Chacham, he killed, he's dead. Killed. But that's not the story. Right. The story is about, really, the story is about how the Chacham has to be aware of his power. Right. Well, I would say the guilty party here in the story is Rav. You know, I might say today you don't... Part of the problem with you, I read today biographies of great rabbis. You would never find a story like that. It's too self-critical. Needless to say, you would not find stories like in the Tanakh. Right. Because these are not angels. The story, I think the following. The story is really about, clearly the Talmud thinks that hurting someone might cost your life, hurting a saintly person might be this. But it's really about the awareness of the saint or the great rabbi of the damage he can bring through his own power. Now, do people have to believe in the curses of... It's really not also about curse, right? It's not that if someone curses you, it's really about the fact that he offended him again, right? That he harmed him again. So I wouldn't take this as the main line of the story. I think the story is far more shrewd, far more clever.
I'm just trying to follow the
Gemara.
So, if that's the main statement of the Sugya, why did Ma has to go in the story of Rav? Unless Rav really had to appease the butcher in this case. I mean, that is the Sugya, yes. Three examples.
Well, because the Gemara says, "Kol ha-matnit chaveru tzarich faiso bedvarim." Yafe, good. Then you ask yourself, okay, but to go and lefayes someone, you have to. It's a difficult thing because first of all, it's repeating the offense. Sometimes you don't want to show up your face. You are ashamed. You don't think that the other side is ready to receive you. It's you know the difficulty. And then the issue of availability begins. And Rav deals with that issue of availability. Yes.
So when you say Itzumo Shal Yom Mechaper, by Adamo Makom, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of us is for us to show up since he is available? And is that what you meant by Itzumo Shal Yom Mechaper?
Well, you see, no. It means. This is a very radical concept of forgiveness. Usually, we say forgiveness comes after a change happens. Some change. You expect the person to change and then you forgive. There is an opinion in the Talmud that it goes the other way around. That what allows a change is forgiveness. That's the opinion of Rabbi. He says, well, sometimes people will not change because they think they would not be forgiven. Right? They are prisoners of their past. So there is a very radical opinion, which is a dat miut in the Talmud, that says, true. He thinks that the causal relationship between change and forgiveness is reversed. That what makes forgiveness, what makes change possible, is forgiveness and not the other way around. By the way, I say in some situations we do it with our children all the time. Sometimes you feel the child is cornered himself with guilt and is afraid of your anger, etc. He would not change. He plays a role. He plays the role of the bad child, you know. So you have to kind of forgive him in order to allow his change. You don't do it with the children of your neighbors, that's true. What with your own children, you do it. So this is the opinion. Now the whole issue of, the whole problem of not being tied by the past. How do you untie a person from the past? this is the way I understand Rabbi's opinion. By the way, Rabbi says that it's umo shel yom mechaper, but the one who megale panim b'Torah umperosh min hatzibur, which means that that the person who, if you are inside the community, so then forgiveness precedes, allows the change to happen. But if you are a completely an outsider, that wouldn't work. This is the way I understand Rabbi's opinion. Yes.
And then in the first story, is there some amount of taking revenge? I mean, somehow after he gets the garbage on his face, so he feels better, and so okay, now I can forgive him. The thing that revenge works?
It's really it's not revenge because Rabbi Abba didn't intend this to happen.
But still, once it happened, he felt better.
Yeah, once it happens, he feels he can show up his face. So the other one is, there is a one-upmanship now. You know, the other one has to come out. Yeah. But it's it's kind of a twisted form of creating availability. Right. Yes.
I think that, there's also this idea of class relationships and about how you have to sort of recognize your position as, are you the one with more power, even though you were the offended party?
Yeah.
And so the idea of becoming, I've become a garbage can, you know. So in hurting you, I might have lowered you, but now Martha's, now we're equal in position, not necessarily
right.
in guilt or
right.
in evil doing.
That's interesting, but I think it's more interpersonal because I was hurted by you. By in your house, at your door. It wouldn't be, you know, if it happened to me somewhere else, I don't think it will have the force. You cannot say, no, now I'm also harmed. I think it's the interpersonal dynamic that goes on.
I agree, yeah,
right.
I'm just saying, but I think there's something there about what connection does forgiveness have to do with our positions in society.
Right.
We all, you know, we yeah. don't ask our, you know, we wouldn't ask our children to ask our forgiveness as much as we might our peers, because
right.
our children are more innocent. They,
right.
they know less.
Right. Right. Yes.
And then in the first line, everybody has to go, the Chai Yisrael means to ask forgiveness.
Right.
But in the last story, Yudaya says, I'm going to go to the Chai Yisrael
so,
to give forgiveness. Right?
Well, no, I think it's a I'll tell you what I think. It's a very subtle way in which the word, the verb lefayes is used here. Because it says, lefayes means I'm going to ask him forgiveness, right? But Rav says, well, I'm going to lefayes him, so he would what? He would ask me forgiveness, right? I would appease him, so he can appease me. Yeah? That's the term lefayes is used here. But basically, I think by this particular use of the verb lefayes that the narrative uses, he actually predicts that at the end is Rav that has to ask the butcher forgiveness. The end result of the story, at the end, though the butcher is gone. Now Rav, you might say, according to Halacha, will have to put there 10 people. Right? So it kind of predicts by this subtle use of what you might interpret as I'm going to appease him so he will appease me. At the end, I have to appease him. That's the way I think what's going on here in terms of this use. By the way, all Talmud, what's interesting about the Talmud stories, they're very, you know, they're very short. And some of them are very subtle, and their power becomes even more important when they come adjunct to a set of halachot, which I wanted to show. So what I wanted to do this evening is really, first of all, to talk about the issue of the complexities of the act of forgiveness, and again, at least to show my way of dealing with the structure of a sugiyah as a whole. In this case, a short sugiyah. So I wish you all Shavua Tov. It's a pleasure being with you.
Please, everybody, help yourselves.
Thank you. Well, you're welcome.